Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, you can reach us, of course, at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Professor Thomas Wood, who teaches, and he teaches at a college here. He's written a fascinating book called Politically Incorrect, and it goes into so much of what we are told today by the controlled media, and really by many textbooks and many universities teach things that just are not true. And so he's put together a book on Politically Incorrect. Is that entitled History?
Pardon me?
Your book.
Oh, it's The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History.
Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. And we're going to carry the book because my wife loves it. My secretary loves it. They both want to get copies. So I'm going to have to, we're going to carry the book.
Well, these are my kind of people, Dr. Stan. That's great.
Well, of course, you've done a great job. Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and how you happened to write a book on this subject?
Well, actually, let me do them in reverse, and I'll tell you why. I decided to write the book mainly because Regnery Publishing developed this idea that if we do a series of books called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Blank, American History, Science, Feminism, you name it, people will probably buy them because what we're looking for a lot of times are unbiased, give-me-the-truth books, and it's very, very hard frankly, in our society today, with the universities basically in the hands of the left and media being untrustworthy, you're looking for the politically incorrect version of just about everything. You want the unvarnished truth. And so Regnery decided to develop this series, and they tapped me to do the American History book, and it's been very successful. It was a New York Times bestseller. But what began to happen was when some people read the book, some of my opponents, shall we say, I was attacked fairly viciously as a result of the book. And who does this kid think he is, overturning all this conventional wisdom about American history? But what they never mentioned was that I do actually have credentials. They tried to make it seem like I'm some crackpot out of left field. But, I have been teaching American history for a number of years. I've got my degrees are from Harvard and Columbia, which, of course, I understand on your program, Dr. Stan, you've got a good enough audience that would listen to that and say, well, this guy must be terrible. But I'm one of the few who I think got through Harvard and Columbia with his sanity intact. And so I am somebody who I think, at least from my scholarly work and my educational background, I'm not just some guy out of right field, so to speak. What I found, as I say, was that my critics didn't really want to acknowledge this. They wanted to just make it seem as if this is some crackpot writing so-called revisionist history. But in fact, all I'm doing is just simply trying to tell the truth after, a generation or two of consistent misinformation.
Well, of course, the tragedy is today that when somebody comes up and tells the truth, they don't attack what he says, they attack him.
That's right.
And when you see someone being demonized and ridiculed, you better listen to what they're saying, because they're probably telling the truth. When you have, of course, people like Dan Rather or so many of the people who work for the media, Peter Jennings and Ted Koppel, who are simply lying to the American people. Why? They're lauded and applauded, and they're given fantastic salaries. And when somebody like you writes the truth, then they become the victim. And really, there is an organized effort to conceal the truth about America's history from the American people. Financed by our great tax-exempt foundations, certainly carried out by the media. We'll be back in just a moment with Thomas Wood. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Thomas Wood, and we're talking about his politically incorrect guide, or a guide to politically incorrect guide to history. And so, what are some of the basic issues where they have actually deceived the American people?
Well, gosh, I mean, it pretty much goes all the way from the beginning up until the present. I mean, I try to pick what I consider to be all the most egregious myths, and it's funny that so far, when I've been on the air talking about the book, a lot of times it's around Christmas time or it's around Thanksgiving, some major holiday, and in each case there are countless myths that are associated with it. For example, at Christmas time, we all have to endure the anti-Christmas message, or the idea that the founding fathers wouldn't want you to mention Christmas in a classroom because they believe in the separation of church and state. You get all this nonsense. I was happy to read recently that a number of the major department store chains have begun to restore the use of the word Christmas in their stores because of the backlash against all this. But every year there's some horror show about Christmas being yanked out of the schools, or nativity scenes being taken away off of town halls because the ACLU has a problem with it. And so what I try to show is that this just shows a complete misunderstanding of how the American Constitution was supposed to work. The First Amendment did not say that the federal government has the power to have federal judges go around telling school systems and town halls what they can and cannot display or what they can and cannot teach. These things, school systems, town halls, local town government, state government, these things were supposed to make those decisions for themselves. And the idea that a federal judge could try to impose a one-size-fits-all policy on the whole country would have been viewed as exactly the type of thing we tried to get freedom from when we fought against Britain. So basically, from something as elementary as that, all the way down through to the present, I pretty much go through, and I pick out in particular a lot of times the people we've been told were the great presidents. And it so happens that the people we've been told are the great presidents turn out to be the bad ones, and the ones we're told were bad and terrible and nobody likes them, they turn out to be either more or less okay or even heroic in some cases. So in some ways, this really is a fairly dramatic retelling of the nation's past.
And yet, of course, it's so important that people do understand the past of our nation. They have to understand that the secret of American freedom was the limitation placed on the power of the federal government, and the federal government could not say anything about religion. Today, of course, we find the federal government regulating everything. Oh, we couldn't have a nativity scene. We can't display the Ten Commandments. All of these things are in violation of the stipulations of the First Amendment of the United States, because there really is a conspiracy against God. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Thomas Woods, and we're talking about a book he's written recently, going into really the distortion of American history. And who distorted American history? How did we get to the mess we are today, where so many of our young people really do not understand that liberty and limited government are synonymous? So many of our young people believe that the government can solve our problems, whereas our founding fathers believed that government was our problem.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's not for nothing that the old phrase was uttered, that who controls the past controls the future, in effect, because if depending on how we think about our past, that's going to influence how we think about what we should do now and what we should do in the future. And so naturally, people who either, frankly, don't like American principles or don't favor the principles of limited government or the Bill of Rights and these sorts of things, naturally they want to use history as a propaganda tool to propagandize for their point of view. You get the young people, they're the ones, if you want to change society, forget about people my age and older, you go for the young people. You get into their heads the ideas that you want about American history. You distort it such that they graduate from school thinking that the only way forward is left liberalism. I mean, it's not just a funny coincidence that the distortions of American history are by and large all in one direction. That's not just a kind of an interesting coincidence that it happened that way. There's a reason behind that. And in fact, I remember when I was in school, the lessons I got were quite simple: that the federal government is my friend, and if you're opposed to it, it must just mean that you want children working in mines and everybody working 80 hours a week and this and that. I mean, that was about the level that we were at which we were taught.
Well, I think it's so vitally important, because I was a victim of a liberal education. I graduated from college when I was about 16 years old, and I really wasn't very smart. I had been indoctrinated with all of these crazy ideas, and it took me many, many years. I guess I was 17 when I graduated, to really unlearn all of the things that I'd already been lied to. So let's start at the very beginning. What about the colonial origin of American liberty, and this idea that, of course, the Puritans were racist and they stole all the land from the Indians, and this whole idea of self-government that originated really with the Pilgrims and with the founding fathers of this America?
Right. Well, I start the book with this chapter called The Colonial Origins of American Liberty, and show really that the major theme we get out of the colonial period is that Americans wanted to govern themselves. That was the important thing. Each colony wanted to govern itself, local towns. This was what American liberty was all about, self-government, without some outside force dictating to you all the time. And so when the Americans got independence from Britain, they still wanted self-government, except this time with Britain out of the picture, now they want self-government from the federal government. They want the states to be able to govern themselves, just as the colonies had wanted to. This was what it meant. It did not mean we want some central government interfering in our lives all the time in the name of protecting liberty. We'll protect liberty ourselves, thank you very much, was the attitude.
The idea that the government would provide us with health care or a pension, or, of course they say, well, do you want people to starve? But it has nothing to do with it. We always took care of people at the state and the local level. Nobody starved to death in America. Everybody could get health care. You had county hospitals in every single county in the entire United States. And nobody went without health care. But you see, now with what they've done, we find increasingly people losing everything to finance their health care. If you don't have health insurance and you don't have a government program, why, you could lose everything you've spent your whole life working for and be impoverished. This is the end result, a direct end result of government interfering with the health care system. So basically, your message is that the founding fathers were really very independent. They did not want government to look after them, did they? In fact, they feared government.
In fact, they did. And of course, I think we're more and more learning. I mean, the Katrina example is only the clearest example, that if you're going to rely on government for life and death matters, you're going to be gravely disappointed, and that's an area where you don't want to be gravely disappointed. I even cite much, much later on in the text, I give a statistic that I think is quite startling, that when you take the average 65-year-old man now, he stands to gain, on average, something on the order of $300,000 more than he put in to federal transfer programs like Social Security and Medicare. But if you then look at an average 25-year-old, he stands to lose many, many, many tens of thousands more than he's ever going to. So I mean, this is not moral. It's not moral to be transferring wealth from one generation to another. When the younger folks are going to age, there's no way these programs, as the demand for them increases exponentially, there's no way it's going to be able to provide for all these people. There is going to be a serious financial meltdown here. It's absolutely unavoidable. And it goes to show that you cannot just simply say, all we need is another federal program. I mean, it seems to me we are hurtling toward bankruptcy.
Well, I think we really are. In fact, anybody who's read Congressman Murtha's speech on the 17th of November, he talked about the comptroller of the currency was terrified with the current economic status of our country, and he put terrified in quotation marks, and you will have a hard time finding that speech up on the Internet. You can find it. It's up there. But they don't want the American people to know that, nor that when Alan Greenspan gave a talk on the 3rd or 4th of November to Congress, he actually mentioned we should tell people the truth, and that is that there's no money there for the retirement, there's no money there for the health care, and they may have to work a good deal longer to begin to prepare for the retirement. We ought to be honest with people, and the most amazing thing is how the media deleted that information from his speech. We have the speech. Anybody would like to read it? And we have Congressman Murtha's speech, for that matter, that the man who's in charge of our currency is terrified. Of course he's terrified. We're a bankrupt nation because we've done exactly what other people have done, and other great nations, and of course we've promised all sorts of things. There's no way we can deliver. Well, all sorts of fascinating things. You talk a lot about the Constitution. Do you want to sort of develop that idea? Because certainly, if we don't understand the Constitution, how can we possibly preserve it?
That's exactly right. That, in a nutshell, is why knowing history is so important. Sometimes students want to know, what's the point in studying this? It just seems completely remote from them. But you cannot hold on to your liberties unless you know your own history. And in particular, I think I've pulled out some fairly juicy quotations from people like James Madison, the father of the Constitution, Thomas Jefferson, a great interpreter of it, and a great many others. It's interesting to hear James Madison in the 1790s saying that if we're not careful, and if we don't interpret this Constitution the way it was written, then what's liable to happen is that the federal government is liable to wind up dictating to the states about education and interfering in matters of religion and interfering in matters of poor relief. And he goes on and lists all these things that, of course, today the federal government does routinely, and Madison is describing this as, in his view, an unmitigated disaster. Well, we're living with the unmitigated disaster. And to all those who say, well, you know, look, the Constitution has to change with the times, it's 200 years old, and who cares what people that long ago thought anyway, well, the fact is that the framers of the Constitution inserted in there the ability to amend it. If you want to amend the Constitution to change it in accord with the times, you're free to do that. But what you're not free to do is simply to say, well, times have changed, but gosh, it would be too much trouble to go amending the Constitution. Let's just pretend as if it says X, Y, or Z. That's when you get in trouble, and that's why Thomas Jefferson warned that we went to great lengths to get ourselves this written Constitution. And if we just read into it whatever we want to have there, then our Constitution is no better than a blank piece of paper. And there's no way I can improve on that statement.
And I think that's really so true. I think that people have to understand that the men who created this country, many of them were brilliant. They knew the history of ancient Greece. They knew the history of ancient Rome. They knew all of the classics. And they wanted not to make the mistakes in America that had always been made by nations before. And they knew that democracy did work. Do you want to develop that idea? Because, you know, it's amazing. I was 33 years old before I ever questioned the fact that we were a democracy.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is actually not just an academic distinction. This is important that the United States was established as a republic rather than as a pure democracy where there's just a simple counting of heads for every single issue. If you look at the Constitution, it's actually quite anti-democratic for a reason. There was a concern that people would just appeal to the immediate material wants and envy and jealousies of the people. And so instead, we got, for example, the Electoral College. The president is not elected through a mere counting of heads. The president is elected through a system weighted according to the population of various states and so on and so forth. I mean, this is important because a pure democracy, like they had in ancient Athens, would be a system in which everybody votes on every single issue. That's certainly not what we have. But there's also a concern that if you do that, what's to stop some demagogue from saying to the great multitude, well, listen, you guys are more than the other group, and why don't you just vote to loot the other group? That would be the end of society. In fact, that's what Benjamin Franklin said. As soon as people realize that they can just simply vote themselves their neighbor's money, that's the end of your republic. And that's an important point.
And that's exactly what we've done. We've promised all these things to the people. We've, for instance, the policemen and firemen put pressure on the legislators to give them amazing amounts of money for their pensions. And the trouble is, there isn't any money to pay it.
That's right. And in fact, beyond that, we have the fact that we have here a system, we're supposed to have a system of self-governing states, where the states, by and large, are free more or less to govern themselves as they see fit. And even if the other states don't like the health care that's being offered in the state of Massachusetts or whatever, the idea was that's the right of that state to do that. And regardless of the fact the other states outnumber them democratically, Massachusetts still is free to govern itself.
And because they don't want self-government, they want all the governing to be done from Washington, D.C. by a massive bureaucracy that has the efficiency of FEMA and Mr. Brown.
That's so, exactly right.
And down through the ages, it's always known that systems like this collapse because the people vote for the man who promises to give them the most and the country goes bankrupt. And ladies and gentlemen, we are bankrupt today. And if you don't understand history, then you're not understanding what's really taking place in America today. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by three decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in five glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. Or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Thomas Woods, and he's a history professor. He teaches history, and he's written a wonderful book called The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. And, of course, he goes into really all the things you should know about our history, and you're not going to get the truth through regular history channels. You've really got to go back and either read the original material or find somebody who's written the truth. And so much of history has been rewritten. Why? Because there are people who have a different agenda, who have a different vision for America, and they want a one-world government. They want to centralize all power in the hands of a massive unelected bureaucracy and stifle the very freedom that once made America the envy of the world. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Civil War, because you go into that at great length, and most people have a totally distorted view of what the Civil War was really all about. So why don't you pick that story up?
Sure. Now, This one, Dr. Stan, particularly with Doris Kearns Goodwin, the convicted plagiarist, has a new book on Lincoln out, which is just contributing to this the mythology of Abraham Lincoln. And it's very, very hard to penetrate this mythology, because we were all taught about Honest Abe, and we were all taught that the war was fought to end slavery and all this. Well, basically, unfortunately, Americans have been sold a bill of goods on this Civil War issue. It was not fought over the slavery issue. Lincoln made quite clear that, in fact, if the South would just come back into the Union and not secede, but come back into the United States, he would be willing to support an amendment to the Constitution that would forever prevent the federal government from ever interfering with slavery in the future, if that's what he had to do to keep the Southern states in. And throughout the war, Lincoln was obsessed, positively obsessed with the question of where the blacks should be resettled, because once about 18 months passed into the war, Lincoln did turn to emancipating the slaves simply as a war measure to discombobulate the South. Lincoln was then absolutely beside himself with the idea that that these freemen could not live among whites; they could not be assimilated, and so he spent much of his time looking around for a suitable place to send them. He considered at one point setting aside the entire state of Texas for the freed black population, but he also considered places in the Amazon. He considered the possibility of other places in Africa, including Liberia, which had already been set up. But you know, this in effect, this is the real Lincoln on this issue. He was very clear on his racial views that blacks were inferior to whites. He said this repeatedly. He said he had no intention of giving them equal rights with whites. So the cartoon version that our kids are fed every day, it just could not be further from the truth. But but this doesn't just arise in a vacuum. It's not like this. It's just a coincidence that this myth arises. There's a purpose to it. Basically, people today on the left, and frankly, many on the so-called on the right, like the kind of regime we have now, with a very powerful presidency, a very powerful federal government, and Abe Lincoln and his war to prevent secession, I believe, are the origin of that. It's the origin of big government in America, and so naturally you want to put the best possible face on this. You want to put the best possible face on Abe, because he gave birth to this new highly centralized regime under which we now live. But those of us who are cringing under this regime and don't much care for it need to realize that this isn't just we're not just living with a problem right now that goes back to Bill Clinton, or that goes back to Lyndon Johnson. It goes back further than that. Things are much too bad at this point for them just to be attributable to something that has happened over the past 10, 20, 30 years. It really got started under Abe.
And I think it's so significant to understand that when he issued the Emancipation Proclamation, when President Lincoln issued that, he freed the slaves in the South, but not in the North. He freed the slaves in the South where he had no jurisdiction, and left slavery in the North where he had jurisdiction. In other words, it was all hypocrisy.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny that today sometimes defenders of Lincoln get very upset when you point this out, but the interesting thing is that in the 19th century, at that time, the British Prime Minister joked about this as well, that the whole thing seemed like a self-serving sham, that Lincoln does have authority over the North, and yet nothing was done about slavery in the states that had stayed in the Union. But of course, the Southern states believed they had seceded. They followed all the proper procedures. They had special conventions in the states, and it was there where he claimed to free the slaves. But they don't consider him to be their legitimate president. So a lot of this is just a kind of a lot of window dressing to try to win European support for the Northern cause.
And, of course, the thing is that the Southerners wanted to succeed really for economic reasons as much as for the slavery issue. Slavery was not the major thing. The Southerners felt that they were being taken advantage by the North, and that was the reason economically they wanted to succeed. But, you see, there are people who want an all-powerful federal government. And, of course, the Civil War was very, very useful along that line. It justified them changing, amending the Constitution to expand the power of the federal government into the states, which was never what was intended.
That's right.
Help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaur's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaur's book, Inroad to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're talking with Dr. Thomas Woods. Now, his book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. We do carry the book, and if you'd like to get a copy, well, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. It's a great book. It's easy to read, and it's got a lot of great information that you need to know to really understand what's happening today from the point of view of a historian. So let's talk a little bit about the Reconstruction after this terrible, bloody Civil War. It was just, 500,000 Americans died in that foolish war. And how many more lost everything they had, especially in the South? But then came the Reconstruction. So what happened during Reconstruction?
Well, Reconstruction is one of these areas of American history that it's been hard over the past, I would even say, almost half century to get anything resembling the truth on it, because the major book that is now used in college classrooms on Reconstruction is written by a famous Marxist, Eric Foner of Columbia University. His book, Reconstruction, is used practically everywhere, and that is largely a propaganda tract from beginning to end. What I'm arguing in my book is that Reconstruction was not, in other words, the years following the war when the southern states were going to be reestablished in their status in the Union, was not a glorious time in American history, but it was a time of criminality, of contempt for the law. It was a time of a complete lack of regard for the Constitution. The southern states were put under, with the exception of Tennessee, the other 10 states that had been in the Confederacy were placed under military occupation, almost certainly illegally. The president at the time, Andrew Johnson, tried to resist this, but they overrode his vetoes and, in fact, trumped up charges to get him impeached and weaken him further. But ultimately, what probably the most lasting legacy of Reconstruction is the 14th Amendment to the Constitution that hardly anyone knows about. We know the 13th abolished slavery. The 15th extended the vote to people regardless of race. The 14th Amendment is sort of this elusive thing. And yet what's interesting about it is at the time, everyone was told that the 14th Amendment was just a very limited thing and it was going to protect the freed blacks in their basic rights of owning property, traveling where they wanted, entering contracts, that sort of thing. Basic rights for the freedmen. That's what we were told the 14th Amendment was all about. Then it was passed, and I show in my book that the 14th Amendment was almost certainly not constitutionally ratified, but it was declared ratified. Well, today, the 14th Amendment has been used probably over the past 60 years for all kinds of purposes that nobody who drafted it at the time could ever have dreamed. I show in my book, for instance, that when California, in the 1990s, when they passed a ballot initiative to say that if you are an illegal immigrant, you cannot get free state services because California is going bankrupt, it was a federal judge that overturned that popularly voted on resolution. By 2-1, people voted in favor of that. But on 14th Amendment grounds, a federal judge overturned it. Now, what on earth do illegal immigrants getting free state services, what does that have to do with the 14th Amendment and the rights of free blacks? Of course, nothing. But case after case can be cited on how the 14th Amendment has become the crowbar the federal government has used to worm its way even more into the life of the state. So the 14th Amendment is sort of like it's like a tiny version of what's happened to the Constitution in general. It went from being a specific, limited amendment to then becoming this absolutely open-ended amendment that allows for anything. And in fact, that's how the Constitution in general has been. It had specific purposes, its words meant specific things, but now today the Constitution at large is used to justify practically anything. So the 14th Amendment was passed unlawfully, and it has since been used for purposes that no one ratifying it would ever, in his worst nightmare, have dreamed it would be used for. It has been, basically, it is a complete history of dishonesty from beginning to end, the history of the 14th Amendment, and this is completely kept from the American people.
Oh, it's sort of like the income tax. It was, we were going to have an amendment, but it was only for the very wealthy. It would never go beyond
3%. Oh, that's right.
And it would never, of course, affect any of the average people. Sort of like the alternative minimum tax. That was only for the very, very wealthy. That's
right.
How they sold it to Congress. They lied to Congress. They lied to the people.
And it's funny, that AMT, that alternate minimum tax, that thing is going to start becoming an issue because that was supposed to nab people who were getting too many tax deductions. They wanted to say, look, we're going to take your money anyway. This was only supposed to apply to the rich, but now more and more the middle class is getting hit by it. And the same thing is true of the income tax. Everyone was told that this would be just for the rich. And in fact, when someone stood up in Congress and said, well, why don't we insert into the amendment an express limitation saying it can never be raised higher than 10% of income, people laughed it down and said, of course it'll never go up to 10% of income. We don't need to put that in there. It just goes to show you could just never, it's very hard to underestimate a politician. It's just very, very hard. Everything always winds up worse than the worst-case scenario. The worst-case scenario, what was given at the time, was that we'd get a 10% income tax. Well, I think we would all be very happy to have that worst-case scenario today.
I remember, of course, in the First Samuel, chapter 8 of the King James Version, why a Lord told Samuel to warn the people that if they got a king, he would take 10% of what they had. But, of course, the kings back at the time of Samuel were pikers next to the IRS today.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we would practically invite them back if we had the chance.
Well, let's get into the First World War. Incidentally, for our listeners out there, each chapter is different, and we really can't get through all of them, but a fascinating chapter on the World War One. And what in heaven's name was America doing going into the First World War, which was a European war totally contrived by Europeans, and yet we were sold, oh, this was going to be the war to end all wars. Isn't that wonderful? and we were going to make the world safer democracy. So that sounds like what they're trying to tell us today. That's where we're fighting, to make the Middle East safer democracy or something of that sort.
Right. That is the line we always get. And yet, in just about every way you can imagine, Woodrow Wilson's decision to get the U.S. into World War I worsened every bad trend in Europe at the time. And what I'm trying to argue in my book is sometimes not well received by some people who call themselves conservatives, because what I'm trying to say is that, yes, of course, the government fumbles when it intervenes in the economy and it intervenes domestically, but it also fumbles a lot of the time when it intervenes overseas. I mean, like, I'm just as skeptical that the U.S. government at home can create a perfect society here as I am that it can remake the whole Middle East or the whole of Europe abroad. I mean, why would it be bad at one thing but good at the other? I suspect it's bad at both. And, yeah, so I show that, of course, as you say, Dr. Stan, I mean, this war was absolutely absurd, an absolute horror show. That I mean, it was absurd for Europe, let alone for the U.S. to be involved. I mean, you want to talk about an absolute slaughterhouse going on. When the U.S. did get into the war in April 1917, it was only in for the last year and a half, we still got nearly 120,000 dead Americans, another 250,000 wounded. And being wounded in World War I doesn't mean, you cut your finger. I mean, it was World War I that gave us the term basket case, which refers to a quadruple amputee. That's the nature of the casualties that we were getting. And so I show, first of all, that really all the reasons that were given for us to get into the war were very largely contrived. The American population was not behind this decision. That's why Robert La Follette, a Democrat, a progressive, got up in the Senate and said, listen, you put this war resolution up to a vote in the country, by 10-1 Americans will vote against getting into this war. He says that's why you have to conscript them to get them to fight. He said, because they're not interested. That's why you have to go on street corners and propagandize them, with propaganda speeches, because they're not in favor of this. So we got this war that people were not interested in, and it didn't even deliver what Woodrow Wilson promised. He said that this would usher in it'd be the war to end all wars, it'd be everlasting peace. But what it did was it made possible such a lopsided treaty against Germany when the war was over, and that the U.S. contribution to the war made it possible, which it wouldn't have been possible in the absence of U.S. involvement, to impose an extremely harsh punishment on Germany, such that naturally, not to anyone's surprise, in the 20s and particularly in the early 30s, hyper-patriotic politics in Germany won the day, as more and more Germans said, how long are we going to be treated like third-class citizens in Europe? We're a major, serious country, and we're being treated like Iceland or Lithuania in terms of the amount of army we can have and various other insults of that kind. And so it was ready-made for Hitler to rile up the German population against the international order, against the treaty that was imposed on them. And that's why a great many historians have argued that the way was paved for Hitler by doing this. And it just goes to show that good intentions are not enough. Woodrow Wilson thought the German Kaiser was the worst, most evil man imaginable in the world. Well, you know what? It turns out that anybody would have killed to have the old German Kaiser back instead of Hitler. So sometimes your choices are not good or bad, but bad or much worse. And I think by intervening in World War I, Woodrow Wilson ultimately put us on the path of replacing a bad with a much worse.
Well, not only that, but we had, of course, a revolution in Russia. We had a revolution in Turkey. We destroyed the old Austria-Hungarian Empire. We destroyed the German Empire. And we really changed the face of Europe, as you say, laid the foundation for the establishment of Hitler's Germany, and we prolonged the war for a year and a half. The war would have ended in early 1917 if America hadn't come in. Why did we go into that war? Do you think it was simply because Woodrow Wilson had this utopian dream, or were there other forces at work?
I think it's a variety of things. I think partly it is that Woodrow Wilson was a university professor who thinks abstractly and he has grandiose visions for what he can do in the world. That's certainly a factor. It's interesting that in the 30s, other people, took a more cynical view of what brought us into the war. In the mid 30s, we got the Nye Committee, which Senator Nye wanted to look at the extent to which, believe it or not, weapons manufacturers and bankers may have influenced some people in the White House and influenced the move toward war. There was an investigation to that effect. And the argument was, for example, on the part of the bankers, the Germans financed most of their war effort through taxation, not from borrowing, whereas the British and French borrowed an awful lot from American banks. And the concern was that if Britain and France were to lose this war, these banks are never going to get their loans repaid. It would be impossible. So in fact, Thomas W. Lamont, who was part of the J.P. Morgan financial empire, even said that even though Woodrow Wilson told us all to be neutral, we never knew how to be neutral. We were always for the Allies from the beginning, frankly, for clearly financial reasons. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes of this that is not just a matter of a cutesy president with cutesy ideas. I think, unfortunately, there's something that's much more sinister involved here.
And I certainly agree with you, and I think this is true in so many wars. And the wars are never fought for the reason that the people are told. They tell the people one thing, and they have another agenda. You've got a section in there about the sinking of the Lusitania. What about the sinking of the Lusitania? Why was that so important?
Right. Well, it's interesting that the sinking of the Lusitania, which was a British cruise liner in 1915, doesn't immediately lead to U.S. involvement in the war, because that comes 2 years later, but it does turn American public opinion even further against Germany, because there's a lot of anti-German propaganda, and this just contributes to it. There were about 128 or so Americans who were killed in that disaster. But what's interesting about it is that what wasn't told to people at the time, there's a lot of stuff about this that wasn't told to people at the time, the Lusitania was also an auxiliary cruiser of the British Navy and was in fact transporting ammunition through a declared war zone at the time. And in effect, they were using the passengers on that ship to shelter the ammunition, because the thinking was no one will dare fire on this ship. It would be a public relations disaster if the Germans fired on it, because they'd kill all these civilians.
But hadn't the Germans actually warned that they were going to sink the ship and pleaded with the Americans not to go on it?
They put out full-page ads in American newspapers telling people, you sail on this at your own risk. Think it's a war zone. I mean, you wouldn't go on a picnic in the middle of the Western Front in France, would you? Well, in the same way, you shouldn't be sailing on a cruise liner, for heaven's sake, through a declared submarine zone, people. Think about what you're doing. And interestingly, William Jennings Bryan, who was Woodrow Wilson's Secretary of State, after this happened, and Woodrow Wilson was very upset at the Germans for firing on this, on the Lusitania, William Jennings Bryan said, look, the fact is it had ammunition on board. You should not be using passengers to shelter the shipment of weapons of war through his war zone. And he also said that, why is it that you, Woodrow Wilson, have raised hardly a peep about the fact that the British Navy is trying to starve the German civilian population to death? They're trying to starve an entire country. Yes, it was wrong to fire on the Lusitania, but the Lusitania is not very many people when you compare it to, by the end of the war, about 750,000 Germans dead of starvation. Why do you have no objection to starving a whole country, but you're all up in arms about one very mysterious ship being fired upon? Ultimately, William Jennings Bryan felt he had to resign from that cabinet because he knew Woodrow Wilson and his hirelings were bent on war, and he was replaced by a pro-war guy, Robert Lansing. So there were no dissenting voices any longer after Bryan's departure.
And of course, the tragic thing about the whole story was there are many people who believe that the British wanted that ship to go down because it would be a justification for going to war. The British had promised a destroyer escort, and then at the last minute, just as the ship was going to go into the war zone, they pulled the destroyer escort and they ordered the ship to go at 3/4 speed to save coal. Well, they didn't save much coal because it all went down when the ship went down, but it made it a much better target for the German U-boats. Did you run into that story?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Dr. Sin, I did not know about calling off that destroyer escort at the last minute, but it does feed into what I've long suspected, and I think there's circumstantial evidence to the effect that frankly, the British were not exactly beside themselves with grief to learn that this had happened. In the same way that when the Japanese firing at Pearl Harbor came, Winston Churchill even came out and said that it's a glorious thing, it's what they've dreamed and longed for. I mean, you would think that just simple propriety would tell you not to talk like that after something, a terrible tragedy like that has occurred.
Well, there's so much in history that people don't know, and those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it, said George Santayana. I really believe that's important, and I think this is really a great book that you've written. And, you know, is it still selling pretty well?
From what I understand, it just won't go away. It continues to plug along. It does well. It's doing well around Christmas time, which is nice. And they've now got three books in this Politically Incorrect Guide series. There's a brand new one, Politically Incorrect Guide to Science, that's quite good. And I think it's just they're going to keep on doing it. European history, possibly. The possibilities are endless.
I want to try. The book is A Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. And if you'd like to get this, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we've only just begun to, of course, just scratch the very beginning of the book. So much more information that people need to know. Well, do you have a parting thought for our listeners before we let you go?
Oh, gosh. Well, only that because there was so much that I couldn't fit into this, that a year from now, I've actually just signed on with Random House to write another book on American history where I'm going to dig up things that are even more startling than in the first one. And I could pretty much make a career doing this from now till I'm in the grave, because there is just so much to tell. So I look forward to telling it.
Well, of course, we'll look forward to talking to you again on your book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
Good night. Bye-bye. We'll be back in just a moment.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean real, hard-to-find, all-natural Pure Soap that contains no dyes, perfumes, deodorants, or antibacterials. Probably never, right? Hey, folks, Michael Trudeau here, and I want to tell you about my friend Marty. He's the owner and founder of the Calben Soap Company. For the past 55 years, the Calben Soap Company's been making triple-concentrated Pure Soaps exclusively for healthcare professionals and hospitals. Now, for the first time, Calben Pure Soap is available factory-direct to you and your family. Calben Pure Soap is made from all natural ingredients. It's earth-friendly and it's safe. Call the Calben Soap Company today toll-free at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Visit them on the web at calbenpuresoap.com or call for information at 1-800-340-7091. That web address again is calbenpuresoap.com. Try Pure Soap once, and I guarantee you'll never use anything else.
You know, when I was growing up, my parents weren't worried about our education. We were taught the basics of math and English, science and history, the joy of art and music, and the need for sports. And our generation turned out leaders in every field. But as a parent today, I am concerned with my child's education. That's why I chose VHM Christian School. I know that at VHM, my children are getting a quality education with a biblical foundation. I'm not worried whether they'll be prepared. I know they are. VHM gives my children the tools to succeed and instills moral values. There are so many issues for me to be concerned about. I'm glad my children's education is not one of them. Won't you call VHM today? Your child is worth it. Call 475-4762. That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you'd like to get a copy of the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, it's very well done, and we recommend it. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we were talking about my book, AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. When I wrote that book, I really didn't understand the AIDS epidemic. I found it impossible to believe that anybody could have genetically engineered a disease that would kill literally hundreds of millions of people. And so far, about 20 million, 20 to 30 million, 30 million are dead now. Another 40 to 50 million are infected and will eventually die of this terrible disease. Well, if you really would like to understand the background not only of the AIDS epidemic, but of so many of the things that are going on and the new diseases and why we have in America today 65 million people with a sexually transmitted viral disease, the end of a very successful public health policy. Why, if you go into Botswana today, 42% of the women there are HIV infected, the pregnant women. Same thing is true in Malawi and South Africa, where they do have very good statistics, and they're all going to die. A very successful public health policy. Well, you need to get the new video or DVD we put out. It's a talk we gave for the Prophecy Club, and it's called, entitled, Planned Population Reduction. So you can get that if you give us a call, Planned Population Reduction. It's 2.5 hours of me talking, but there are a lot of graphics and things up there to break the monopoly, and we've had some very good reports from it. We hope that many of you will seriously consider doing that. Now, we did make an offer starting this morning, and that was we wanted to put our video, it's called The Brotherhood of Darkness, onto a DVD. Actually, the book which we have written came from the talk. Somebody saw the video and said, I'd like to make a book. And so we actually worked with him and we got the book together. But the talk, the video has really been very, very effective. And so if you would like to help us, what we're offering you is 25 of the DVDs that we'll have made up, and you'll get them for $99. And of course, it's a great thing. If we can get 15 people, and it sounds like an awful lot of people have already called in, if we can get 15 people, we'll go ahead and have them made up. They'll be made up professionally down in the Hollywood area. And so if you'd like to get the 25 of the Brotherhood of Darkness videos, or pardon me, DVDs, and it'll be exactly the same as the video, why, you can call 1-800-544-8927 and leave your name and address and your Master or Visa card or Discover card. We won't bill you until we have them in hand, but we're going to go ahead and get them made up, and I think that this is going to go. I think that this will give us an opportunity to give you an opportunity to distribute some of the better things that we've actually put out. So if you're interested, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and you'll get 25 of our DVDs, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll pay the postage and the tax, but for $99, you can't go too far wrong. We think it's a great opportunity, and it'll help us as well. Again, if you'd like to go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, that's RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our radio programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet. And, of course, you can also listen to the archive programs. You can pull down our newsletters. RadioLiberty.com, if you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters and you haven't been in contact with us before, why, we'll send you a copy of our Peak Oil 2 newsletter, which will explain why your utility rates are going up, your natural gas, your electricity. And it's all part of a scam. But you not need to know who's doing it, and is there an agenda behind that scam? And there really is. It's to impoverish the American people. It's all laid out in the Earth Chart. If you'd like a copy of that, we'll send it to you if you can't pull it down off the Internet. But we ask you, of course, to check our website of RadioLiberty.com. We ask you, of course, to call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like any of the products we've talked about. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.